I am so sick of the media dictating the terms of the narrative in this country. I'm so sick of having to be apologetic for who I am. I'm so sick of people in middle America being called flyover country or slope-headed.
Conservative teabaggers.
And it's going to be teabagging day.
It's hard to talk when you're teabagging. Appreciate it very much.
It's so funny because the teabaggers, the one thing they hate is when you call them racist.
If racism is not the whole of the Tea Party, it is in its heart.
The hatred that Timothy McVeigh, that he had. There are plenty of people like that right now.
Lots of.
I think you get the general tenor of this. It's anti-government, since this is highly promoted by the right-wing conservative network, Fox.
The left pits people against each other. Divide and conquer is the strategy. I don't want to live in that world. It is the exact opposite of E. Pluribus Unum. And what the left has stood for with political correctness is to try and get those with whom they disagree to shut up. And the Tea Party movement and Sarah Palin and Michelle Bachmann and Alan West and all the people that have gone out there against the mainstream media and said, you're going to call us racist? You're going to call us potential Timothy McVeighs? F*** you. War.
Good morning. Good morning and welcome to Road Warrior Radio. You're tuned in live this Wednesday, April 27th, 2022 on the one and only Republic Broadcasting Network. And as always, thanks for coming along for the ride. It is a wild and dystopic ride. It is, despite the grand utopian dreams, which go back some time, I think, you know, I was thinking about some different things, had some different things in my mind lately. I think what we will do actually is maybe I'll give you a little excerpt from Manly Palmer Hall's The Secret Destiny of America. Rather than give my commentary on the duality of American history, the intentional duality and the, you know, the wolf hiding in sheep's clothing. It's layers of the onion. You know, you read guys like Hall, and it's not quite as steeped in esoteric, Gnostic, you know, Kabbalistic, theosophical nonsense. Just, you know, these theosophists and Kabbalists are really, in essence, misguided Luciferians. And when I say misguided Luciferians, they think that's what they're actually just Satan worshipers, and they don't know about it. You know, it's this grand conspiracy, if you will, that funnels into a larger hierarchical conspiracy that the initiate does not really discover until essentially it's too late, so to speak. So you read folks like Manly Palmer Hall, and you see the grand utopian vision and you hear about, you know, the concept, for example, of the Order of the Quest and those kinds of things, which speaks to the, you know, the hero's journey, basically. Who doesn't want to be involved in some heroic quest to save mankind and to bring some utopia? But there's more to the story. It doesn't end there, and so not so fast. There's more to the story. So I think we'll get into that. Before we do, though, again, one of the things that's been stuck in my mind lately is Oswald Chambers' entry for April 21st in my utmost for his highest. We look for God to manifest himself to his children, God only manifests himself in his children. Other people see the manifestation. The child of God does not. We want to be conscious of God. We cannot be conscious of our consciousness and remain sane. And being conscious of our consciousness is the plague that essentially Freud told Jung they were bringing, that we didn't know, bringing the plague to America. They don't know it. This conscious of our own consciousness, that's the plague, driving people insane. And people can't see. If in simple terms, you just step back and you start to examine what happens when you become more introspective and so on and so on, you're essentially driving yourself crazy. I think there's an element of that it's an addiction that feeds on itself, like every other addiction. And the more you can get away from that, the more sane you become. Like Chambers observed, it is opinions of our own which make us stupid. When we are simple, we are never stupid. We discern all the time. So this is the antithesis, and I would say the antidote, frankly, to the solipsistic world in which we find ourselves, that is increasingly trying to turn us inward, get us to self-examine. But really, again, it's just, you know, prostrating ourselves before the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. That's what it really turns out to be. And this is part of the devil's strategy, whether it's the work of the hierarchy or, you know, Hall's Secret Destiny of America, or it's all the same thing. It reads the same, and you can sort of see the thematic elements. And it's not a new strategy. It's not a new trap, so to speak. It's the same old trap, the same old game, since, say, the garden. Yea, hath God said. So, you know, this idea, this solipsistic idea that, you know, anything outside my own mind, I can't be sure of. And I think, therefore, I am, as I said the other day, I think, therefore, you are crazy if you think you exist because you think. So we get sucked into all of this Gnostic nonsense if we're not careful, and it's a slippery slope. And along the way, you know, you have the utopian discussion, man can, and the perfectibilist discussion. I suppose without further ado, maybe we'll just dive in. I'm going to give you some excerpts from Manly P. Hall's The Secret Destiny of America today. And I think we'll start, a lot of places we could start, a lot of places we could go. Maybe we'll start with Chapter 7, The Democratic Tradition Preserved by Secret Societies, and probably Chapter 8, A New Identity for Christopher Columbus. And you can, if you're paying attention to these themes, you know, what is going on with Columbus Day in recent years? Is that a heralding of the new age, since we're going to say goodbye to Christopher Columbus? And so from there, Chapter 9, The Prophecies of Nostradamus. Chapter 10, The Design of Utopias. I think maybe we can squeeze some of that in today. We'll do some of that. So without further ado, you know, this speaks to the, again, the duality of American history. And, I mean, I remember Alan Watt talking about the mass migrations throughout history, even into antiquity, and how if you want to do something, you want to do something over here or something over there, or you want to use people to do something, you know, whether it's pitting them against each other or whatever, you foment mass migrations from time to time. And that has happened throughout history. And so we hear about the religious persecution, but was that entirely organic? I don't think so. And there was an effort as several books have indicated, there was an effort to sort of, and, you know, including Hall's Secret Destiny of America, there was an effort to hide these secret orders and this line of, you know, what Hall refers to as the Order of the Quest and so on, you know, the tradesmen, the craftsmen, hide those folks in the, you know, the initiated in the profane. And that included, you know, rather than being persecuted by Christianity, because it's obviously confronting the, let's just call it what it is, the satanic nature of the Gnostic bent, this idea that man can be God and doesn't need God, doesn't need government or anything else or anyone else. Orthodox Christianity, which is redundant, I realize, but it confronts that concept directly, obviously, you know, going back to the Bible, Colossians, Galatians, 1st and 2nd Corinthians, etc., directly confronts the Gnostic bent. So it's interesting to observe, by the way, one of the things that you'll find, there are a number of Gnostic folks who masquerade, I would call them charlatans or Pied Pipers, you know, Judas goats, essentially. In the contemporary era, the folks who, the today's Gnostic who wants to masquerade as some kind of Christian whatever, you know, no, I'm a Christian too. And listen to this guy. He's so amazing. You will find curious little harbingers. For example, most, you know, the Gnostic Christian Pied Piper, which is a contradiction of terms, but bear with me. Those folks who have, you know, who are actually Gnostics who want to pretend they're Christians, and Pied Pipers in particular, have a problem with Paul, the Apostle Paul. Why? Because pretty much everything you read that Paul wrote confronts the Gnostic bent directly. So no wonder it's antagonistic to the Gnostic Pied Piper. Yeah, I don't have any time for Paul. I don't have any use for that because we're doing these other things, you know, we're self-actualizing, we're all-knowing and all-seeing and self-actualizing. We're Deepak Chopra in a Christian package. So, no offense to Deepak Chopra, but hopefully you understand what I'm saying. So, from Hall's The Secret Destiny of America, starting in Chapter 7, from Hall's Secret Destiny of America, a little bit of background that might help explain or at least shed some light on the duality of American history. What are you saying? I'm saying it's both. I'm saying that there have been folks in American history genuinely fundamentally Christian in their beliefs and their actions and daily lives. No man is perfect. But, you know, then there are folks who are essentially wolves in sheep's clothing. And then there are nuances in between. There are folks who emulate the wolves. There are some who want to be the wolves without knowing that they're wolves. There are some who emulate that practice without knowing what they're doing. and, you know, all kinds of subtle variations. So to know exactly who's who in the zoo is difficult, but, you know, you're supposed to test the spirits, the Bible says, so we can do that. But this is just hopefully a little bit of background to shed some light on the duality of American history. You know, if there isn't a duality, again, like I said yesterday, how do we explain all of the symbolism that we have in America? And, you know, if you read Tex Mar's Mysterious Monuments, for example, how do we explain all of that? Kind of difficult to explain, you know, considering, again, you know, you listen to these things. This idea that architecture, as Manly P. Hall put it, architecture remained the chosen instrument for the perpetuation of the great design, the building of the perfect world. We have plenty of that kind of architecture here in America, don't we? If you're not familiar, get a copy of Tex Mar's Mysterious Monuments. His more than two decades plus of going throughout America and, you know, photographing and researching these mysterious monuments. Why do we have these things that have, they seem to have kind of a profane or overt message, or, you know, as Alan Watt put it, the good message, the good reason and the real reason. Why did we make this? But then there's the more esoteric symbolism behind these mysterious monuments. So if there isn't a duality of American history, how do we explain things like that? Why were these things commissioned? And so you can see the ushering in of a new age now with the removal of Christopher Columbus from American history and all of these statues and things, the ushering in of a new age. So, without further ado, Hall's Secret Destiny of America, Chapter 7, The Democratic Tradition Preserved by Secret Societies. Wait, I thought it was, you know, and what have we been doing in America in the post-Bernaysian era? Throughout the 20th century and beyond, haven't we been told that we're spreading freedom and democracy to the world, right? The truth is, and the reality is, something far more horrifying, I would say, generally. We have to bring freedom and democracy to the savages because they don't know. Yeah. A lot of those savages were probably more civilized than the people who brought freedom and democracy, I would say, in at least a few cases. I digress. Chapter 7, The Democratic Tradition Preserved by Secret Societies. A bit of an excerpt. For more than 3,000 years, Hall writes, secret societies have labored to create the background of knowledge necessary to the establishment of an enlightened democracy among the nations of the world. The Greek Dionysians were social and political temple builders. They were what? Templars, known as the collegians in later Rome. The rise of the Christian church brought persecution of the classical intellectual patterns ideology. This is what I was alluding to. Driving the guilds into greater secrecy, but all have continued searching for human happiness, right, wink, wink, under a variety of rituals and symbols. And they still exist as the order of the quest, the hero's journey. Today's thinking toward a democratic world state, and this was published back in the 40s, by the way, on the heels of World War II. So that's kind of the historical context or perspective, and you'll pick some of that up. We will continue with Pike's Secret Destiny of America, Manly P. Hall's Secret Destiny of America when we come back. Stick around. More right after this break.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing, knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Standing 6'4", weighing in 245 pounds of crime-fighting, political science-analyzing brawn, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Patrick Slattery.
So, Mike, get off this anti-cicada agenda.
I'm a born-again traditional Christian, and my favorite possessions are right here on my nightstand. That would be the King James Bible and my .357 revolver.
I'd rather be ruled by Chinamen than Jews.
Cool it with the anti-Semitic remarks, right?
Just because you steal an election and terminate the Republic doesn't mean you terminate the people in the Republic, because we're still here.
I'm not taking the vaccine. Fuck you, Bill Gates.
There was a way forward still on January 6th. What needed to be done is to object to every single state.
The COVID-19 virus was the setup. The vaccine could very well be the bioweapon.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central. And Wednesday at 1 Central.
Reluctantly crouched at the starting line, engines pumping and thumping in time, the green light flashes, the flags go up, churning and burning, they yearn for the cup. They deftly maneuver and muscle for rank, fuel burning fast on an empty tank. Reckless and wild, they pour through the turns. Their prowess is potent and secretly stern. As they speed through the finish, the flags go down. The fans get up and they get out of town. The arena is empty except for one man, still driving and striving as fast as he can. The sun has gone down and the moon has come up, and long ago somebody left with the cup. But he's driving and striving and hugging the turns and thinking of someone for whom he still burns. He's going for speed. She's all alone in a time of need. Because he's racing and pacing and plotting the course. He's fighting and fighting and riding on his horse. He's going the distance.
Yeah. Welcome back. Let me back up, actually, from the beginning of Manly P. Hall's The Secret Destiny of America, published back in 1944 originally. Chapter 1, the origin of the democratic ideal. Again, think about these concepts in light of what's happening today in America. This is not a large book, but it's, you know, sheds some very esoteric light on the what has now sort of come to be known as the open conspiracy. H.G. Wells, another intriguer. So the origin of the democratic ideal, world democracy, Hall wrote, was the secret dream of the great classical philosophers. Thousands of years before Columbus, they were aware of the existence of our Western Hemisphere and selected it to be the site of the philosophic empire. The brilliant plan of the ancients has survived to our time, and it will continue to function until the great work is accomplished. The American nation desperately needs a vision of its own purpose. And under the esoteric image that he includes the caption, "By preserved symbols we can know that it is from the remote past, from the deep shadows of the medieval world, as well as from the early struggles of more modern times, that the power of American democracy has come." So, you know, this goes back to the Atlantean concept, which is really, you know, sort of hearkening back to what has been referred to by these folks as the antediluvian era. It's a way to acknowledge the reality of history and the flood without actually referring to it in plain language. Because then, you know, it's so fascinating to me, just as an aside, the utopians are always working toward a utilitarian, technocratic, cybernetic dystopia, actually. And it's always a counterfeit of the biblical authentic. Getting people to spy on themselves and one another, you know, the Bentham panopticon sort of concept. That's what is happening in ways that people don't realize on the internet. This digital technology is really, really, you know, you hear about certain things and you start to sort of self-censor. We do things. We carry these devices around with us. What did I see today? There was just as an example, I don't want to get sidetracked, but let me see. I can put this here, I guess. A new feature in Google Chrome's developer tools, which means that it's available in the Chromium stack, which means that virtually any browser that uses the Chromium stack, which is virtually every popular browser, has this feature. Let me see. Exactly what it was called. I saw a tweet on that, which is, it sort of makes my skin crawl to use that word. All right. Let's see. So, Chrome DevTools. Yeah, from the Chrome DevTools Twitter account. Woohoo! You can now export, convert, and replay user flows with Cypress. Try out the new Cypress IO Chrome Recorder Library. And you can watch the video right there. Basically, what that means is, you know, I've talked on this broadcast, you probably remember, from time to time I talk about things like recording keystrokes. You can go to GitHub and grab a keystroke recorder script, a little library that you can plug into an app or a website or whatever, and record every keystroke that people make. Well, now here is... this is not new, but it's new to Chrome developer tools, which is in Chrome and Firefox and everything else. You can record user flow. Go watch the video and you'll see what I'm talking about. Stick around. I'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
We'll be right back. American Freedom News is your daily website that will keep you fully informed on what both the good guys and bad guys are doing in the information war in which we are all engaged. Fed up with the lies of the fake news media and the censorship of big tech giants? American Freedom News is the solution, as we provide truth and knowledge on all the vital issues of the day. American Freedom News believes in America first. The establishment wants us split into numerous hostile groups rather than uniting in a common cause against the corrupt oligarchy that is plundering America and the world. Many more Americans are waking up and realizing they are the victims of the ongoing Great Replacement and Great Reset. But the malevolent forces trying to systematically destroy America can and will be defeated. Be fully informed by reading American Freedom News, the best news and information site on the internet. Go to AmericanFreedomNews.us and find out for yourself. That's AmericanFreedomNews.us.
Extendivite testimonials on Amazon are very informative. Here's just a few. Carrie: great product, and I will continue to use. I've been taking it for over a year now. I'm 60 and feel great. I would highly recommend this product to anyone over the age of 40. Amazon customer, 5 stars. I'm quite happy about it. Extendivite has relieved what appears to be an angina problem, pain in the chest after climbing stairs, and short on breath. I'm quite happy about it. Amazon customer, 5 stars. Great product. I use regularly and I rarely get sick. To get your Extendivite today, go to extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com. Or call us at 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
I'm Peter Serfi with today's Liberty Minute. Find more at liberty-lighthouse.com. As soon as the news that Twitter is being sold to Elon Musk came out, several human rights groups raised concerns about hate speech. Elon Musk considers himself a free speech absolutist, while the Human Rights Watch statement said freedom of expression is not an absolute right. Amnesty International is worried about moderation, aka censorship, of hate speech. All of these groups expressing these concerns have forgotten that free speech is the foundational bedrock of all freedom. Hate speech, misinformation, disinformation, and blatant lies are all protected free speech. Personally, I hope the new community guidelines say something to the effect of, speak your mind, just don't break the law. You should be able to say anything that you want, but remember, you just might look stupid when you do. Until tomorrow, Cephas Pacem, Parabellum.
There are all kinds of fascinating, some obvious, some not so obvious ways that the utopians always seem to get us to self-censor and, you know, do things in cybernetic totalist sort of fashion that we wouldn't necessarily do otherwise. So just as an example, and this is sort of an aside from Hall's The Secret Destiny of America, but it's just interesting, you know, the Bible talks about a utopia. You know, you go read those last chapters of Revelation, for example, and that's pretty amazing. There's some amazing stuff happening from, I don't know, maybe Revelation chapter 19 forward. you know, at all. But why are the utopians so interested in doing something that doesn't correspond to that? Why does it have to be not that? In fact, why does it have to be antithetical to that? That's, to me, that's a curious, somewhat rhetorical question, maybe entirely, maybe not, depending, I guess, on who you are or whatever. So I just find that fascinating. There's a utopia. Why don't we work toward that? No? No, it has to be some. Oh, okay. Okay. Well, that seems to tell me all I need to know as far as I'm concerned. So anyway, Chrome Developer Tools, Chrome Dev Tools, Twitter, like I said, tweet yesterday, 9 a.m. sharp, which tells you it was scheduled via the Twitter web app. Again, the tweet reads, "Woohoo, you can now export, convert, and replay user flows with Cypress." What does that mean? And then there's a little video camera icon there. So what does that mean? Well, that means just what it says. You can record, export, convert, and replay user flows. In other words, everything that someone did on a website, for example, or an app, you can record and replay. And you can watch the video and see toward the end, around 49 seconds of the 52-second video, you know, the first part is all, here's basically how you do this with a few keystrokes, a little bit of command line stuff. You can rebuild this user flow, as they call it. And then toward the end, you see just a little mock-up payment deals. We will send you a payment link via email, and you see the entering of name and email. And so this is possible. Is it a bad thing? No, not per se. In fact, it could be a very useful developer tool, but are we naive enough to think that there will be full disclosure in every case when this is used, or that the possibility won't exist that someone might use it nefariously? But also, like I was saying before, when people learn of these things, typically it causes a certain amount of self-censorship. You behave differently. You change your browsing habits or whatever as a result of these kinds of things. You don't just behave like innocent little children. And that, to me, correlates to the utilitarian, technocratic, cybernetic totalist bent and Bentham's panopticon in particular. We're all just self-policing and self-monitoring and self-regulating, self-censoring and all of that, which is the same kind of thing that Bertrand Russell was alluding to in The Impact of Science on Society when he said that a society that's been in charge of education for a generation won't need policemen, because this is what people will do. And so this is an age-old concept. From there back to Hall's Secret Destiny of America, shall we? And again, you know, you read this, it puts a whole different light on the whole concept of this notion of freedom and democracy. Democratic socialism, the world socialist state that folks were talking about when this stuff was still, you know, it still sounded radical and new in a sense, at least in the American lexicon generally, back in the early 20th and mid 20th century. Chapter 2, the world's first Democrat. The leader who had the first social consciousness in the administration of a nation was a pharaoh of Egypt. And born several thousand years too soon, he was the first realist in democracy, the first humanitarian, the first internationalist. He saw that the duty of the ruler is to protect for all the right to live well, to think, to dream, to hope, and to aspire for his dream of the brotherhood of man, he cheerfully gave his life. Doesn't that just sound egalitarian and utopian? So, you know, Hall, among others, informs us that down through the ages, there have been these secret societies and secret orders and things that have guarded this secret knowledge that not everyone is privy to. And, you know, for example, Hall mentions secret societies in African tribes and Indian or Native American tribes. And how can someone know that? You know, how, if you don't speak the language, how can you know that there is some, you know, especially if you speak the language and you don't necessarily know what's going on around you unless you're privy to it, these secret societies hiding in plain sight. How would you know if you didn't speak the language? And this, I think, gets directly to the issue of Ephesians chapter 6, for we wrestle not against flesh and blood. You know, if there is something going on behind the scenes and there, you know, there's a nefarious element whispering to such and such in an African tribe, then they would know kind of who's who in the zoo behind the scenes from a spiritual standpoint, if that makes sense. So in that context, you could see how it would be a possibility. And also, if the devil is trying to preserve certain things down through the ages through the fragility of man, and, you know, man's society and so forth until the appointed hour or moment, you could see how that would create the possibility as well. It's interesting, the world's first Democrat, Hall writes, man has passed out of the state of savagery and has become a civilized creature with the development of social consciousness. The Luciferians, the Theosophists, are very interested in social consciousness. Civilization is a collective state. In our collective type of life, the isolationist is a detriment to himself and a menace to all others. There's a great difference between isolationism and intellectualism. Development of the mind releases the individual from mob psychology. Does it really? I would say not in all cases. But it does not set him apart from the common responsibilities of his kind. See that? Manly P. Hall was a communitarian at heart, wasn't he? A true thinker becomes a force for good within the group life. If his intellectual powers lure him away from the practical problems and values of his world, he can no longer make his contribution to the social unity. And just to finish that, political reforms are not accomplished by the people, but through the people. Behind all collective progress stands the enlightened individual's leadership. The enlightened, or illuminated perhaps, individual's leadership. His superiority does not free him from common responsibility. His is the obligation to assume the greater burden of directing his vision to the well-being of all his people. Again, so utopian, so egalitarian. And frankly, dishonest, patently dishonest. And again, you know, this corresponds directly to things like the work of the hierarchy, which I've mentioned and read from. You know, I don't want to may it never be said that any of this was responsible for seducing people into reading any of this. On the contrary, I'm trying to get out in front of the seduction and beguilement and say, this is what's actually going on. And it's not mystical and it's not fancy or anything like that. It's just the same old nonsense. So, um, Hall writes, let us see how this works. We'll go far back to ancient times. So, leaving chapter 2. Chapter 3, westward ocean travel to the earthly paradise. There's that. From Plutarch's description of voyages, it can be calculated that our great continent in the Western Hemisphere was visited by the ancient Greeks. They not only reached our shores, but explored part of the Great Lakes area. Under a thin veil of symbolism, they perpetuated in mythology their knowledge of our land, which they called blessed. The area was anciently set apart for coming generations in the great human experiment of the democratic commonwealth. But, you know, one man's democratic commonwealth is another man's dystopian, cybernetic, totalist, technocratic nightmare. Chapter 4, the first election of lawmakers. Solon of Athens. Remember, I think it was JFK's, what people call secret society's speech about a decade after Hall's Secret Destiny of America was published. It was the address to the American Newspaper Publishers Association in April of, actually, to this day, right? So, it was, sixty-one years ago? Today, actually. That JFK gave that address, and, you know, those words that people remember, the very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society, right? So during that speech, he actually referred to the Athenian lawmaker Solon decreed it a crime for any citizen to shrink from controversy. Without debate, without criticism, no administration and no country can succeed and no republic can survive. That is why the Athenian lawmaker Solon decreed it a crime for any citizen to shrink from controversy. So, Hall writes, in the first election of lawmakers, Solon of Athens freed the debtors person to reform the institution of debt slavery. He instituted the selection of juries by lot, with all citizens participating, and he gave the voting franchise to all taxpayers alike, thus beginning national democracy 600 years before Christ. See how there's an attempt, a continual attempt to marginalize and effectively besmirch? Interesting that. Again, the Bible speaks of a utopia. Why not that? Why don't the utopians work toward that? And, you know, again, a rhetorical question, I digress. When he later journeyed to Egypt, he there learned of the first war of conquest in the story of the lost Atlantis and became acquainted with the imperishable laws for the government of nations. That's chapter 4. Chapter 5, the ancient League of Nations. League of Nations, ringing a bell? A description of the lost Atlantis was written by Plato. It introduces the league formed by the 10 benevolent kings who ruled over the lesser nations and the three great continents of Europe, Asia, and Africa, and who bound themselves by oath to obey the divine laws of enduring empire. This was the philosophic democracy, with all men having the right to become wise through self-discipline and self-improvement, thus achieving the only aristocracy recognized by natural law. The Atlantis story continues to the later decision of the kings to use their united power to enslave all the peoples of the earth, and the consequent destruction of Atlantis by earthquake and fire. Interpreted politically, it is the story of the breakup of the ideal pattern of government. Well, this is where we get into a bit of dishonesty. Anyway, there's more on that, obviously, in Chapter 5 of Hall's The Secret Destiny of America. You can read that for yourself. Chapter 6, A Roman Project to Give Rulership to the Wise. The Platonic point of view was envisioned by Plotinus to take from a philosopher city establishment of which was approved by his Roman emperor as the noblest experiment in time. But the fear of the Roman senators that the projected commonwealth of learning might finally overthrow the empire brought the project to naught as Rome continued in the advanced state of smugness that immediately preceded the complete collapse of the nation. And again, I think there's actually more to the story. That's chapter 6. Brings us to chapter 7, the democratic tradition preserved by secret societies. So all those thousands of years. For more than 3,000 years, secret societies have labored to create the background of knowledge necessary to the establishment of an enlightened democracy among the nations of the world. Stick around, we'll be right back.
Traveling so much to Europe, South America, in trying so many different coffees that were so good. And every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and the new app, Koshertified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
Man,
Welcome back. But these tears I can't hold inside. I'm going to touch on a couple of things, and we'll go to the phones at the top of the second hour and maybe unpack some of this stuff. I haven't even gotten into this really, but hopefully this sort of sets the stage. And I think maybe we'll do this, I don't know, for a couple of days. We'll see what happens. But, you know, as just an illustration of what I was saying earlier, from Chapter 7 of Hall's The Secret Destiny of America, the democratic tradition preserved by secret societies, he writes, secret societies have existed among all peoples, savage and civilized, since the beginning of recorded history. The esoteric organizations of ancient times were, for the most part, religious and philosophical. In the medieval world, they were philosophical and political. In the modern world, political and social. And I think that right there, you could sort of pause and reflect on, you know, and the esoteric organizations of ancient times were for the most part religious and philosophical. In the medieval world, they were philosophical and political. In the modern world, political and social. And that is just sort of interesting, I think, to ruminate on. Continuing, he writes, secret societies have had concealment and protection as the first purpose of their existence. Why? Not entirely. That's indirect. That's not entirely straightforward. The members, what are they trying to conceal and protect? The members of these secret orders were party to some special knowledge. From whence does it derive? They usually took part in certain rites and rituals, not available to non-members. But it was more important that through the societies, they were also able to practice beliefs and doctrines in private, for which they would have been condemned and persecuted if these rites were made public. A second purpose for secret societies was to create a mechanism for the perpetuation from generation to generation of policies, principles, or systems of learning confined to a limited group of selected and initiated persons, which, again, sounds a lot like, I don't know what, you know, how Carol Quigley described administration transitions and party transitions in Tragedy and Hope, which is interesting, don't you think? Among other things, primitive and, you know, the ancient Neoplatonic or the ancient Platonic and now Neoplatonic system of the democratic socialist world state. But this is interesting to the point I made earlier. Primitive secret orders exist among African tribes, among the Eskimo, and throughout the East Indies and Northern Asia. The American Indian, the Chinese, Hindus, and Arabs have elaborate religious and fraternal organizations. In most cases, these secret orders are benevolent. In most cases, wink, wink. And the members are bound together by obligations of mutual helpfulness and the service of the public good. Why? Well, again, first of all, isn't it interesting? How can you know that if you don't speak these languages? But it's the mob way. If you read the protocols, for example, is it spurious? I don't know. Was it a document that was legitimate and authentic that was released and construed as spurious so that you could hide the conspiracy out in plain sight? If you read it, this is what you hear. You know, you hear it's the mob way. You need a driver. You need a bagman. You need somebody who has a great public image. That's why all of the fraternal orders have such a great veneer, so that you can hide these other things. And as Hall says, in most cases, the secret orders are benevolent. In most cases, wink, wink. So, fascinating stuff. There's more, again, as relates directly to... Stick around, we'll be right back.